Thank you. That's on.
Nice to see you, to see you. If you'd been in the reception in Strange Ways prison that time, you'd have seen the officer writing down those details for yourself. That morning, I'd appeared at Manchester Crown Court, Courtroom 1, the Serious Crimes Court. Judge Gelland had been the judge. If you saw him in the street, you couldn't miss him. He was 3'7". 29 stone, and he had the head the size of a rhino on steroids. He'd sent me down on drugs-related charges. You can imagine, I was gutted. I was taken to Strange Ways, crammed up in a prison van, or a sweat box, as we call it. I was then marched to the reception and patted down. There was an officer at the counter in the reception whose job it was to take down new prisoners' details. You should have seen him. He was smart, stern, and he had a face that looked like he'd been sucking on lemons. He wrote down my name, my address, and my date of birth. And then he wrote down the details of my scars. He wrote down the details of my marks. And then he wrote down the details of my dodgy tattoos. I was then strip searched, given my prison clothes, and then another South Ace officer put me into the holding cell. So here I am now, stripped of all my dignity. Oh no, here I am again. I'm behind prison bars with nothing except my scars, my marks, and my dodgy tattoos. Way, way back in Bible days, there was a guy on the scene called Solomon. Solomon was streetwise. In fact, so much of what he said was that wise that it was compiled into short, snappy sentences and put into a life manual. The Bible, they're called Proverbs, is one of them. I applied my heart to what I observed and learned lessons from what I saw. Scars, marks, prison bars, and dodgy tattoos. What can we learn from these? Let's go see. To start with, scars show that you can come through. The officer in the reception in Strange Ways wrote down the details of my scars. And I know it's not just me who's got scars, is it? Raise your hand if you've got a scar. See, most of us, if not all of us, I've got a scar or two. Do you know you get a scar? As soon as your skin gets cut, your body starts to produce more of a protein called collagen. And what collagen does, it builds up around the area of the skin that's been damaged and it strengthens and heals the skin. It goes through a process which leaves a scar. How amazing is that? There's a verse in God's manual that says, you are fearfully and wonderfully made. See, scars show that you can come through. Do you know, in a way, God is like collagen. You see, God inbuilt collagen into our original design that repairs damage to the skin. That same God can repair damage to other areas of our lives. He can repair the damages caused by those experiences that leave us with cuts on the inside. Those cuts that are more than skin deep. Raise your hand if you know which ones I mean. He says in the Bible, I will heal your wounds. You see, once you give God consent to come in, he starts the process of repairing you. Listen, listen, listen. God cannot like collagen in your life. So you've got more scars that show you can come through. Scars, marks, prison bars and dodgy tattoos. Scars show that you can come through. And marks don't have to define you. The officer in the reception in Strange Ways wrote down the details of my marks. You see, sometimes on our journey, incidents happen, don't they? And they put marks on us. And these marks can end up defining us. You can imagine that using drugs put marks on me, and these marks have defined me. If you'd looked at my medical records back in the day, you'd have seen it. Drug addict. It was Dr. Khan who put it there. He was one of our doctors in Yumin Moss Side. He was bent as a nine bob note. You should have seen him. He had a comb over, a hump back, and he walked with his head to one side, a really good looking guy. It became such a big part of my life, though, that I drew a stick picture of him on the wall in our flat on the Borings, of him sat at his desk, bent over with his hump back, writing out a script. He was my pin-up. I'd started off smoking a bit of weed and taking a bit of amphetamine, and now I've got a picture on the wall of my doctor writing out a prescription as if he was my favourite DJ. That's how bad I got. And the track marks on my arms and the backs of my hands were a right mess. Is it any wonder he put drug addict on my medical record? See, the marks on me had defined me. It wasn't until I had a light bulb moment in a church when this changed. That day I turned up at church. They were banging tambourines, waving flags around. I'm thinking these guys are all basket cases. I came in here to get away from people who are on drugs. Felt really out of place. Then the guy gets up to speak, and after his spiel, "We believe in a God who can heal. Is there anybody in this room with any issues?" Is he having a laugh? I've got more issues than Vogue. "If you want to be prayed for anything, come to the front. What have I got to lose?" So I walk to the front. "What can I pray with you for?" I'm thinking, how long have you got? Well, I've been an addict now 15 years. I'm on 55 mils of methadone. But the main thing I need prayer for is that I hear voices. I suffer from amphetamine psychosis. He said, "Okay, I'll pray." So I thought, I better close my eyes, because that's what you do in church. You've seen it on the telly. And he put his hand on me, and I'm thinking, what's he touching me for? I was going to like, I thought, I better not. I better just roll with it because I'm in his gaff. And I remember, like it was yesterday, as he started to pray, I was shaking as he was praying. Tears started to stream down my cheeks as he was praying. And I had a feeling inside my stomach as he was praying. I'm thinking, wow, get your hand off my head. Wow. And then he said, "Amen." And from that point on, it was like God, the God who created the universe, God, he flicked a switch and the light came on. And within no time after that, I learned how God defines me. He says now that I'm a new creation. He says now that I'm a member of his family. And he says now that I'm one of his sons. And he says now that I'm his masterpiece. So now, with God on my case, my marks have to define me. Not anymore. You take a look at my medical records now. There's been no notes put on there related to using drugs for 27 years. See, marks don't have to define you. Have you got marks on you that's defined you? Maybe you've got marks on your body. But it could be that you've got marks someplace else. Maybe an incident's happened to you and it's put marks on your character, your heart, or your emotions. Listen, wherever your marks are, you need to know that from where God's standing with him on your case, those marks don't have to define you. Scars, marks, prison bars, and dodgy tattoos. Scars show that you can come through. Marks have to define you, and prison bars don't need to restrain you. The other south-faced officer put me into the holding cell behind prison bars. Do you know that we can all find ourselves behind prison bars? Because not all prison bars are physical. Your prison bars could be a bad education, a bad upbringing, a bad experience. See, for most of us, it's things like these. It's these kind of prison bars that hold back our potential. Raise your hand if you know what I mean. There's a guy in the Bible called Isaiah. He said that God sets the prisoner free. Listen, they held mine back. But you know, now they don't. My potential was held back right from the off. When I was at school, I really struggled. In fact, if you want to know more about my earlier life, it just happens that there's a book on that table over there. Once an Addict, when that book came out in 2007, we started a project as a charity to give a copy of that book to every single prisoner in the United Kingdom. Right now, there's 94,000 prisoners behind bars in the UK. We have sent 54,500 copies of that out for free into jails. One small way that you can support that, if you want to buy a copy of Once an Addict, we will then send two into prisons for free. Anything you buy from that table goes into our charity, and that is earmarked for the prisons work that we do. I speak in 51 prisons a year. We don't get any funding from the prisons for that. I'm going to be speaking in the Young Offenders on Tuesday in Wetherby. We don't get any funding for that. We're going to be sending books into that prison. After I've spoken, we don't get any funding to cover the cost. So we have to be creative on how we raise the funding. But man, I really struggled at school. Do you know, when I was at school, it didn't take me long to realise I had the IQ north of a bedroom slipper. The wheel was turned up, but the hamster was dead. My nickname at secondary school was Bungalow. Why? Because I didn't have much upstairs. The light was on, but there was nobody home. I left school with no qualifications. The only thing that I took with me was a coat hook that I made in metalwork and a bronze swimming certificate, and that was forged. So you can imagine how I felt years later when I turned up at Cliff Bible College. Everybody was dead posh. Then I turns up, nice one, top one, sorted, bang out of order. Everyone was educated, but me. I could barely string a sentence together. I remember that first week at college. Well, one of the tutors took us on a tour around the campus. He took us into a room that's full of computers. Is there anybody in this group who's not familiar with IT? It? I've been in it for years. I didn't have a clue. Also that first week, we went to our first house group. Radical idea that the church came up with, groups that meet in houses during the week. Our house group leader, Andy Smith, is a mate of mine now. He gave us all a small piece of paper. Right, what I want you all to do, I want you to write a letter to yourself saying what your hopes and fears are for the coming year. On that, I'm going to need more paper than that. I'm going to need at least two pads. So I sat on the floor and I wrote some stuff down. When we'd all finished, he gave us all an envelope. Right, put the letter in the envelope, seal it, write your name on the front and give it me back. The next time I saw mine was on graduation day. I never graduated anywhere before. I've been out of jail a few times, the nearest I can. After graduation, I went to my room, opened the door. What's that on the floor? Someone shoved it underneath the envelope. Where's that come from? Oh, that's that letter that I wrote to myself a year ago. I sat on the bed, I opened the envelope, and I pulled the letter out. If you'd have been there, you'd have heard me read it out. This is the Microsoft spelling and grammar check version. Dear Barry, comma, because I'm educated now, space, I am writing this letter to tell you what my hopes and fears are for the coming year. I hope I can learn better English, both in written and spoken. I hope I can learn more about God. I hope they accept me onto the second year course. My fear is academic work. My fear is I may not have enough knowledge. This is only a small piece of paper. Barry. As I read it out though, I got all emotional. Because here I was now. I just graduated my first year at college, and I was one of the highest mark students, and I just been given a prize for the best New Testament student, and they moved me from the 1 year foundation course to the 3 year degree course. And while I'm there, I did my English GCSE and passed. And to top them off, I learned all about it in it. You see, I gave God consent to come in and he released that potential out of me. Listen, prison bars don't need to restrain you. Think about those prison bars that sell you back. Whatever they may be for you, God can liberate you and he can release that potential out of you. Listen, prison bars don't need to restrain you. Scars, marks, prison bars, and dodgy tattoos. Scars show that you can come through. Marks have to define you. Prison bars don't need to restrain you. And dodgy tattoos can be removed. The officer in the reception in Strange Ways wrote down the details of my dodgy tattoos. Have you got dodgy tattoos? You're my kind of person. I've seen them all. I have the Glock gun tattooed on the prisoner's arm, with the words out of the Bible underneath it, no weapon formed against me shall prosper. I always wanted to know what that verse meant. Made in Eccles. Tattooed around my schoolmate's belly button. Love and hat. No E on the end of hate. On my mate's fingers. No regrets. Regrets spelt wrong. On the woman's neck. I've seen them all. And like some of you, I've got dodgy tattoos. The officer in the reception in Strange Ways wrote the details down. If you looked at my arms like he did, you'd see my dodgy good luck tattoo that Saz Cooper in Caddy's Head did. It didn't work. I had nothing but bad luck after having it. And then you'd see my dodgy cannabis sleeve tattoo that Billy the Hippie did in his makeshift studio in his bedroom upstairs, using his dodgy, wobbly tattoo gun. My girlfriend had the same tattoo, and she was always like, mine looks like a Christmas tree, Baz. And it did. Then you'd see my other cannabis leaf tattoo that Steve did in the market, the underground market in town. He was a speed freak. It took him 39 seconds to do. Didn't have not those tattoos out on a Saturday, I tell you. I was like, wow. And then there's my other dodgy tattoos, the ones on my hand. The officer in the reception in Strange Ways didn't know anything about these because I didn't get them done until I was 6 months into that sentence. And I must admit, confession time, these dodgy tattoos on my hand were a massive, massive mistake. They chipped me out from Strange Ways to Preston. Now I was in a cell with a guy who was called Peter. He's still called Peter. He had dark hair, brown eyes, and he was an easy guy to do time with. Some of you know that when you're in jail, and you can guess, you miss your partners. Peter, I'm missing my bird. I know what I'm going to do, Pete. I'm going to do a tattoo, because I want her to know that I love her. Baz, I'm missing my bird. Will you do me a tattoo as well? Yeah, of course I will, Pete. So I got a needle and some cotton from the mailbag shop, and I got some water-based paints from Jack the Lifer on the wing. And I did our tattoos. They were proper, proper dodgy. If you'd have been in our pad when I did them that night, you'd have seen me. I did his girlfriend's name, Nikki, across the top of his arm. The letters were different sizes, and it wasn't straight. It didn't look right, but I convinced him it did. Oh, look smart, that, mate. Do you think so, Baz? Oh, man, she's going to be well chuffed when she sees that. And then I did some asterisks on my hand because I wanted to be different. And then I did the name Lisa on my finger. I love you, Lisa. I'm missing you. I didn't know then, though, that I was going to end up marrying a girl called Tina. That's when I knew that these dodgy tattoos on my hand were a massive, massive mistake. So I decided to get a remover. Googled it. Tattoo removers, Manchester. We're all over the place. Interesting names, too. Laser rays. Holier than thou. Clean start. I clicked on laser rays. Oh, that'll do. That's not too far away. They use laser treatment, like most of them do, to remove dodgy tattoos. It's an interesting process. You sit in a chair with your dark glasses on. You put your arm in an armrest. The guy doing the treatment sits in his chair with his dark glasses on. He picks up a laser pen that's attached to a machine. He's got his foot in a pedal that's attached to the same machine. He holds a laser pen to your skin and he presses the pedal. And as he presses the pedal, it fires laser rays into your skin. And as the lasers penetrate your skin, they disturb the ink and eventually your skin gets clean. Look, no more ink. See, dodgy tattoos can be removed. Some of you in here have got dodgy tattoos on your skin, like me. But you know, in a way, we've all got dodgy tattoos. So you might not have tattoos on your skin, but I do know that we've all made mistakes. Titus in the Bible says that we've all made many mistakes. Raise your hand if you're perfect. See, nobody is holier than thou. That's why God came 2,000 years ago, 2,000 miles away. He broke into history. He became a man. His name is Jesus. Jesus is God with skin on. And he came to this earth and he was tempted just like you. But he resisted temptation. And he allowed himself to be nailed to a cross. And when you give him consent to come in, do you know what he does? He erases away your past faults. He erases away your past flaws. He erases away your past failures, because God is a great laser eraser. He removes the ink. He removes the mistakes. And he gives us a clean start. See, dodgy tattoos can be removed, but you need to give him consent to come in. For part of the 90s, in Manchester and Salford, I was known as the raving taxi driver. I would go into town to vinyl exchange and buy tunes during the day. Then in the afternoon, I'd record a mixtape on my Technics 1200 turntables, Waka Wong, Choka Chong. And then I'd take that mixtape with me to work at night, because I was a private hire taxi driver. And I'd listen to that mixtape over and over and over and over again, whizzing off my head. On amphetamines. You should have seen me look like an hyperactive nodding dog on speed. Early hours one morning, I thought, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to go to the front, Moss Side. Some of you remember the Art Lager. That's where the front used to be. Pulled up at the front there. Got my window open about that much. My music's blasting. Car's full of smoke inside. Guy comes to my window. Mate, have you got any weed? He looked around. Put his hand in his jacket and he pulled out a big blade. Take me to Wally Range. Stuck it through the window. He mustn't have had any weed. And then I remember, what do I do? Grab the knife and let him in? Or what? Grab the knife or let him in. I thought, I better not grab the knife. Just imagine the Manchester Evening News the next morning, raving taxi driver, stabbed to death at the front, didn't fancy that, so I let him in. Listen, God will never do that to you. He will never force his way into your life. He'll only come in if you give him consent. When you give him consent to come in, he gets busy erasing away your mistakes, getting rid of the mess, and he gives you a clean start. And right now, God has stood outside your life with his laser gun, his laser pen. He's waiting to remove your ink. He's waiting to remove your mistakes. He's ready to give you a clean start. But you, as a man, you as a woman, need to give him consent to come in. So, I'm going to land this back where I started. That day when I was in the reception in Strangeways. That morning, I'd been sent down by Judge Jelland. I'd been taken to Strangeways, crammed up in a prison van. The officer looked like he'd been sucking on lemons. He wrote my name, my address down, then he took down the details of my scars, my marks, and my tattoos. Then I was put into the holding cell by the other South Face officer. Oh no, here I am again. Scars, marks, prison bars, and dodgy tattoos. Today, we've taken a leaf out of Solomon the Wise Man's book to see what we can learn from these. Please stand. No going outside for a smoke just yet. If you're able, that is. Listen up. Listen up. Listen up. Right now, God is stood outside your life. He's waiting to remove your ink. He's waiting to give you a clean start. But you need to give him consent to come in. I'm going to pray a prayer. I'm going to invite two groups of people to pray this prayer with me. The first group, those people who have never given God consent to come in. It could be that you've been attending this church, but you've never given God consent to come in. It could be that you come into this church to please your partner, but you have never given God consent to come in. It could be that you've been holding off because you're prideful. Park your pride outside. Don't put it off any longer. Let God in. It could be that you're a 12-stepper and you're struggling with making God the higher power. I get that. But pray this prayer and see what happens. So the first group of people, those people in this room, you're going to pray this prayer if you've never given God consent to come in, and God's going to flick a switch in your situation. It's going to ignite something for you. The second group of people are those people in this room who have started a faith journey at some point in the past, however long ago that was, but right now, for whatever reason, things ain't going that good. And you're not really living how I want you to live. Listen, the Bible says there's no condemnation for you. But I just want to say, pray this prayer to reconnect, get back on track. And everybody else in the room, you make up the third group. You're going to pray it to encourage the first group and the second group. Are we ready? All three groups repeat after me, phrase by phrase. Dear God, I come to you today and I admit that I'm not perfect. God, I ask that you forgive me for all my faults, for all my flaws, for all my failures. God, I ask that you wipe my slate clean and that you give me a clean start. And God, I ask that you give me the strength that I need for my struggles and be like collagen in my life. And God, I ask that you empower me to change the things that I can't change on my own. While the heads are bowed, if you've prayed that prayer, you're part of the first group or the second group. Can you put up your hand so I can see it as quickly as you can? Keep your hands up, keep your hands raised, keep your hands raised, keep your hands raised. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Put your hands down. 8 people already. This might be some more. 8 people have raised their hands. You don't need to raise them again. But as I count down 10 seconds, it's giving you an extra 10 seconds if you've not put up your hand already to put it up. But I want to say this as I count down 10 seconds. Park your pride outside. Put it in your pocket. Do something with it. Get it out of the way. Because pride can stop you connecting with God. Get it out of the way. So those of you who've raised your hand, those 8 people, you don't need to raise it again, but the rest of you in here, if you've prayed that prayer, you're part of the first group or the second group. As I count down 10 seconds, it's giving you an extra 10 seconds. Anybody else? As I count down, 10, 9, anybody else? 8, anybody else? 1 at the back, thank you. Anybody else? As I count down, 7, anybody else? 6, anybody else? 5, 4, park your pride outside. Anybody else? 3. Anybody else? 2. Anybody else? 1. 9 people have raised their hands. I'm going to count to 3. On the point of 3, all those people who's raised your hands, on the point of 3, I just want you to leave your seats. Not yet. When I count 3, you're going to go through that door. Why? I've brought some packs with me. Inside each of those packs, there's a book. Little book that we want you to take home and read wherever you're staying. There's also a little card with a QR code on it. If you've got a phone, scan that QR code and that'll take you to a video. And then I say, what do you do next after praying that prayer? What did I do next? I explain. If you've not got a phone, jump onto somebody else's. Don't nick the phone, but ask if you can use it or sit with them and use it. And someone from the church is going to chat with you for a couple of minutes as well. So as I count down, on the point of 3, you're going to leave your seat, you're going to go through that door, and that's it. Are we ready? 1, 2, 3, you go now. Let's give them a round of applause.